there is no God, and he's not saying there isn't a God, but he's saying that if you just trying to find purpose on this earth by itself, it's all worthless, it's meaningless, and there's no real advantage when you live for a short while and labor and work hard and then just die. And so he now is going to turn in chapter 7 to this idea of, well, while you're on the earth, wisdom always excels over foolishness or folly. Because some people say, hey, since you live here a little while and then you die, you might as well just be crazy. You know, just do whatever you want. And he says, no, that never works out. So he's going to extol the value of having wisdom. He's already done that earlier in chapter 2 when he asked, he considered wisdom, madison, and folly in verse 12. And he said, wisdom always excels folly just as light excels over darkness. So, but now he's going to give us a series of little proverbs that are for our consideration that demonstrate how wisdom, you know, beats out foolishness all the time. When we say a proverb, that's just a witty little two-line statement. And of course, Solomon wrote much of the proverbs, and so it shouldn't be surprising that he's doing this as well. But before we look at that, I don't want to review or repeat everything that Brad taught, but I just want you to consider chapter 5 and verse 18, just one of his summary conclusions right here, before we look at his observations in chapter 7. Because this is going to help us a lot if you just grasp verse 18 through 20. Because it's easy to start getting cynical about life when you listen to Solomon, because everything seems to be worthless. And yet, here is a little interjection of how you're going to find some joy and happiness on this earth. Verse 18. Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting. All right, so mark this down. Highlight it, he said, in your life. To eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his, what did your Bible say? The reward, or what else? I'm sorry? Heritage. All right, and that's a good word, heritage. Because a heritage, well, it's your legacy. It's what you work for. It's what you deserve. And he says, God's going to reward you with something. Furthermore, verse 19, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he's empowered him to eat from them, to receive his reward, rejoice in his labor, because this is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life, because God has kept him occupied with the gladness of his heart. So what's he saying? You work, you labor, you work, you labor, and then what do you do in the end? You die. And you're not any better off than a dead dog or a dead cow. And so Solomon throws up his arms and says what? It's all vanity. But here's a little gem. While you're working and while you're achieving and you get a little nest egg, God's gift to you and your reward is to enjoy the profits of your labor. Not just save it, save it, save it, and then let some die and some other person take over it all. And they're going to do what with it? Their inheritance, whatever. They're going to enjoy it and spend it. So what is Solomon saying? God's gift to you is right now while you're alive. Spend it. Enjoy it. Eat, drink. Should you feel guilty? No, he said, God's gift to you is to enjoy some of the pleasures of this life, because every good and perfect gift comes down from heaven. He created this world for us to enjoy. He gives us the ability to make profit. He gives us the health. And so one of the biggest blessings is, for example, to sit down with your family and have just a wonderful meal. And maybe having excess. When I say excess, we don't need the double chocolate cake, right? And we don't need, you know, to have all the food we eat sometimes, like for Thanksgiving. But should you feel guilty? No, because this is God's blessing to you, that you can enjoy the fruit of your labor. Now, if you did it every day to excess, what does Solomon say about that? that's gluttony. And, you know, and there's abundance where you go over, you know, extreme. But you should not feel guilty, but rather you should enjoy it. Now, there's finding the balance is hard, right? Because there's a covetous person that gathers but doesn't enjoy. And that's greed, right? But to enjoy the fruit of your labor, invite other people to enjoy it, that's a blessing and a gift of God. Does that make sense? So especially when you come back from another country and you see what they don't have and what you do have, it's easy to feel guilty. But you can't go fall into that trap. Be ready to give and to share, but enjoy what God has given you today, because tomorrow you might not have it, right? And that's okay, because your trust is not in the stuff, it's in God Almighty. All right, Clinton, you had your hand up. Right. Acts what? That's right. Because you work, you plant, plant, you labor, and the harvest comes in. Should you not enjoy some of the products of your harvest? Well, today our harvest is not usually crops. It's money or whatever else we have reaped by our labors. But it's a blessing, all right? Just wanted to share that with you. So now let's turn to chapter 7, okay? Wisdom's always going to win, and there's a little wisdom. Now, some of these little short, pithy things can be striking. First of all, verse 1, a good name is better than a good anointment. And that's coupled with, and the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Like, what? What are you saying, Solomon? Because I'm down with the first one. A good name is better than an anointment. Now, if you got sick or a scratch or a rash, and they didn't go to the pharmacy and get prescription medicine, they would use ointments and oils to help soothe them and to cure them. And he says, there's something better than any of those things that take away your ills, and that's a good reputation. And he says that also in the book of Proverbs, that a good name is better than silver and gold, because what can you do with a good name and a handshake? Secure a contract without any written papers and, you know, all this? Yeah. Can you get people to help you? You know, a good name is so valuable because it takes a lifetime sometimes to earn it. And what does it take to destroy it? One indiscretion. One, you know, not being faithful. One not following through. It's so invaluable. And when you have it, well, it's better than anointment. But then he couples that with, the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Like, what? Why would he say that? It's over, she says.
Well, I think, too, that when one is born, you haven't yet achieved anything with regards to your life. But at the day of your death, you've had a chance to walk in this life and follow God's law, do his will, and then the day of your death is better than the day of your birth because okay. You made application.
Now, he's going to be speaking from a Christian aspect, and what you said is absolutely true. And we'll address that. But initially, is Solomon considering the Christian's life and he gets to die and go to heaven? So why would he say it's better to die than it's better to be born? And she said it's over. What are you going to say, Brian?
Well, he doesn't have to see the injustice and the unfairness in this world anymore.
He's already talked about that. All he sees is injustice, hardship, inequity, and vanity. And so is there a way like it's over? You rest from your labors. Wayne?
No more suffering.
No more suffering. Someone else had their hand up? That's exactly what he's addressing here. I like this one person. Before ever a child speak, he prophesies by his tears of his ensuing sorrows. He's like, what? Well, how does a baby enter this world? Whack. And he's saying, those crying and those tears is a prophecy of the life to come for that child. And they say, well, that's kind of dismal, and, you know, but is that not true? The longer you live on this earth, what do you see around you? Injustice and corruption and disease and death. And we're going to talk about death in the next verse. And there's just sorrow upon sorrow upon sorrow. When we were in Kenya, it just got this one Christian just lecture us and talk about all the corruption in the government there in Kenya, even though they voted in a new president that promised reform. The old president got less votes. He had a new election, and no one showed up to the second one by threat of a death and other reasons. And so he kept the presidency, even though he lost it. Now, he just went on and on and on, where the government needed some tax revenue. So Bota Botas are little motorcycles. They don't have taxis or public transit, and you don't have cars. You take Bota Botas, which is a motorcycle. It's called a Bota Bota because it used to travel from the border to the border. So it goes from the border to border. Bota to Bota. Bota Bota. You got it? And they decided, well, we're going to impound everyone until we get a $10,000 shillings from each person to recover their Bota Bota from impound. What reason? What did they do wrong? Nothing. Just because they needed money. And they says, you know, it's just always oppressing us. And that's why he says, you know, when you're dead, it's over. We rest from our sorrows and our works and our labors. Now let's plug into what Dave said. For a Christian, is the day of our death better than the day of our birth? Because the day of your birth, we celebrate that. We had a baby. People have, balloons, and sometimes you see them on the mailboxes, you know, baby John was born or whatever. It's a great day. But for a Christian, what beats that day, hands down? The day you die and you're birthed into heaven, and you do rest from your labors and all your strife and all the temptation, all the sorrow, and seeing people die around you. And that's what he's saying. Death is the end of dying. Is that not true? And that's why Paul said, I'm hard-pressed between the two, between living and dying. Because if I live, it means more hardship on this earth. But if I die, I get to be what? With Christ. And he says, that much is much better. That's why he said it's better. Now, for the Christian, we embrace death. We don't despair about it. I just want to share some quotes with you. One is never prepared for the loss of a loved one. Is that true? From all the people I've ever talked to that has lost their spouse, the common theme with all of them, they just want to die themselves. Without exception, they just want to die, rather remain on this earth. Because nothing prepares you for living without your loved one. And then another person said, the loss of loved one is the worst thing anyone can handle. And then finally, death leaves a heartache that no one can heal, but love leaves a memory no one can steal. That's true, isn't it? And when you die, all that ends on this earth, doesn't it? No more death, no more sorrow. And that's why I think as Christians, we look forward to the day where God will wipe away all our tears. Okay? So, it's kind of striking, but as you get older, you realize this more and more. If Solomon counts the days of one's death better than the day of one's birth, there could be no objection to why that also may not be reckoned among one's remarkable and happiest days. In other words, it should be the most look forward day that you have. Right.
He qualified it and said, but it is more profitable for him to be there and to assist them.
Right.
And so the lesson I get from that is that, well, yes, it is far better to be with the Lord, but at the same time, your work isn't done yet.
That's right.
So we have a purpose.
No, exactly right. When he's speaking from the first person, he'd rather go. But when he's speaking from Christ's point of view, it's being selfless. It's better that I come and serve, stay and serve. Because I'm going to help more people go, right? So exactly right. So it's not like we wish death, like suicidal, but we embrace it. So verse 2 follows it. And he said, it's better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, and the living takes it to heart. Now, the next two verses will follow up on this, but when he says a house of mourning, what is he speaking of? A funeral. Right? It's one of the interesting, in some African communities, when someone dies, you hire mourners, And the more they can wail and cry, the more money they bring. So you actually hire them to come to your funeral because it makes your loved one that has passed seem to be more respected because you have all these people wailing. Now you say, that's just weird. Well, that's their culture. Well, they had mourners back there, a house of mourning, where they'd come in, people are just wailing. They're crying and say, why would I want to go there? Why would I want to go to a funeral? It's depressing. It's sad. People are crying. And so, especially on the West Coast, more so than in the Bible Belt, we've sterilized death. When I say sterilized, when's the last time anyone's been here to a viewing at a funeral? Now you say, what's a viewing? Some of you don't even know. It's where they have the body on display before the service, the funeral, and you come and pay your last respects and look at the body and visit the family who stay there all day long greeting people as they come and pay their last respects. And you go up to the casket and you look at the body. And it used to be it would last for a week or longer, but now it's for a 1 to 4, you know, at the parlor. But most people don't even go because most people don't even have one. Now, honestly, who's last time someone's been to one in the last year? 1, 2.
Last year?
And within the last year. All right, in the last year? All right, 4 or 5, your hands. You say, well, why would I want to go see a dead body? It's traumatic. He gives you the answer. What's the answer? What's the answer? That's you laying there pretty soon. That is the end of every man. You're going to be that body laying in that casket. Well, why is that helpful then?
Reality check.
The living, while you're still alive, you take it to heart, and now you rearrange your whole life based on that coming day. Because you know it's coming. And now I have a new perspective, and I direct my step totally different as the compared to the foolish person who thinks, well, I'm going to live forever. Doesn't matter what I do because there's no consequence. I just keep on living. No, the clock's ticking, and it's soon going to be over. And that's what he says. It's better go to a funeral. Yes, Sally. Linda. I caught myself as soon as I said it. Linda.
But even at that, in our Western culture, they dress that up pretty good. There is a movement where people are going back to, they actually wash their dead loved one's body, and they display it in a different way. But it's pretty sterile when they have a $10,000 casket.
Yes. No, I understand.
It's a quick look, but there are some cultures here in America that are trying to change that.
Oh, really?
Make it more hands-on, real.
And it's healthy, and it's hard. And I'm not saying you should have a viewing when you die. I'm not saying that. But is there a degree that we do sterilize and remove ourselves from death? We just kind of push it away. And we don't want to deal with it. We're doing everything to avoid talking about death, thinking about our death. But he says the wise man will consider it because that's you pretty soon. Now, it's better than a house of feasting. That's a party. Because what does a party teach you about life? What does it teach you? What life lessons do you learn about a party when you're all said and done? I mean, it's fun. It's a lot better fun than a funeral. Any hands down, you know, any day. But he says, if you got a party where you can just laugh and have a great time, or a funeral, he says it's better to go to the funeral than the party. Because the party teaches you nothing. You learn no life lessons, but a funeral will change your life forever. And it'll remind you and keep you grounded. That's what he's saying. Now, we're going to have a service for Anel. An announcement will be made, you know, later about the time. And it's interesting who shows up and who doesn't. And usually the youth don't show up. And sometimes parents shield the youth from it because they think it's not healthy. Well, no, Solomon says, wisdom says, take them. Take them. All right? prepare them, talk about it, but take them. All right? Brian.
Going to a funeral will also give you a greater resolve to live for God.
That's right. Those one of the life lessons. Because you know that's you pretty soon, so I got to have my life in order. Right? Exactly right. Very important verse that we just consider. That's why the Psalms says, teach us to number our days, because it's the end of every man. And then it also, we find in Hebrews 9, 27, it's been appointed for man to die once. You don't have to face the second death if you prepare yourself. That's eternal separation from God, Revelation, the second death. But the first death, everyone will taste, right? It's an appointment you won't miss unless Christ comes first. So the living take it to heart. Heather.
To piggyback on what you said about younger people, like, I don't know what age you are thinking.
Well,
children, basically, I was just thinking of, it sounds strange to say this, but some of my fondest memories is going with you to visit somebody on their deathbed, or yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying about
yeah.
kids that...
Well, it does. It shapes your life, and it doesn't hurt you. I mean, some people think when they consider a cow comes from a slaughterhouse, they say, what? They have to kill? I thought steaks came from Safeway. And honestly, people say that. So where do you think Safeway gets them? Well, from the back? Well, yeah, it comes out of the back, off a truck, but where does that come from? It had to be a moo-moo cow that was killed, right? There has to be death for you to eat that steak. We are so isolated from death and farm and reality and the land and the earth and the life cycle. No wonder people don't think about God and things above, because they think, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, because we're going to live forever. No consequences. So embrace it. Yes.
Right. Situations. Society-wise, the celebration things kind of come from some of what I understood about 10 years ago was everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a time to pay respects, and it's all relative to what you believed, and there's no sorrow needed. Everybody's going to be fine. And there's a kind of a check and balance with that, where the services and paying respects is for that family and individual, but it's also a check and balance on God's word.
Mm-hmm. Because it is a day of mourning. It's not just, celebration of life. It's a day of mourning. There's a sadness. I don't know if that's what you're suggesting. Yeah, exactly. Yes, Wayne.
Just a footnote. I remind ourselves that it's still okay to go to festivities.
Oh, yeah.
Even Jesus attended yeah. festivities.
Weddings.
And created a miracle.
That's right. No, we're not saying don't go. We're saying don't forget this one. It's better. All right? All right, so when we look at that, he continues on. Sorrow's better than laughter. When a face is sad, a heart may be happy. That's interesting. When a face is sad, there might be an inner joy inside. Because do Christians face sorrow? Yes. Does that mean they're dismal and despairing and suicidal? No. Sometimes just sorrows come, but there's an inward joy and contentment, even though on the surface you're gloomy that day, right? And I've said it before, and I've always... You know, I've said it to my children, don't worry, because the sun will always come out tomorrow. Tomorrow might be a week later when the rains come in Oregon, but does the sun always come out someday? Things get brighter sometime. So he's building on this. The mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, but when the mind of fools is in the house of pleasure, they're looking for their next party. That's all they live for is the next joy and party. No responsibility, no accountability. Let's just... And that's the youth today. And that's really the mindset of America today. just work and get off work so you can go party or play. And I'm not saying that's wrong, as Wayne said, because that's why I started with, what's the gift and the blessing of God? To enjoy the fruit of your labor, having a meal, having a party, but keep it balanced, okay? And that's what he said. Oh, is there something wrong with this picture? No one even saw it.
Yeah,
Kevin saw it. What's it? What is it? Is that appropriate? But yet that's the attitude of a lot of people. It really is. Like, they go to these things. If they go, they're not present. They're still somewhere else planning the next party or something. I just thought that was an interesting picture. Okay. All right. Then he goes to verse 5. It's better to listen to the rebuke of a wise man for one to listen to the song of fools. For it's the crackling of thorn bushes under pots, so is the laughter of a fool, and this too is futility. This phrase here, the crackling of thorn bushes under a pot, it's like nettles crackling under kettles. Now that's a play on words, right? That's really what he's talking about. So if you have a pot and you want the fire to get hot really quick to heat up that pot, you throw in a bunch of brambles or dry little sticks. Now, do they flare up? And crackle. But how long do they last?
Sure.
Gone. I mean, they're gone. He says, that's the flattery, the song of fools, the advice of the idiot. I mean, it sounds good, it feels good, and gets you all charged, but how long does it last, and how long does it serve you well? Just a little bit, and then it's gone. So he says, that's laughter, that's the fool. But if you have a person that'll sit you down because he loves you and cares enough about you and rebukes you, you should do a word study on rebuking in the New Testament. You know, the admonishing is one thing, and it's to call someone to your side. That's what the word admonish means. It's, hey, let's have a talk. Rebuke is a stronger word. It's trying to say, hey, you're going the wrong way. You better change right now. If you take that to heart from a person that cares about you, he says, when you compare laughter of the fool or the rebuke of a wise man, which one will profit you the most? You say, well, yeah, that makes sense. But is it hard to take a rebuke? Because pride gets in the way, doesn't it? Don't tell me I'm wrong, because pride gets in the way. It's hard to be humble. And that's what he's saying. Yes, Brian, then Ann. Yes. You're doing great. You don't have any problems. Don't listen to that old God that's rebuking you. Right, that type of attitude. Yes.
The operative word there is to listen to.
Oh, if you didn't hear what she said, the operative word is to listen. Now, is that just hear what they say and then go on your way? No, listen and heed is the idea of listening here. All right? And so seek out someone that'll tell you straight, but still love you. Not because they have an axe to grind, but they love you. And they're going to just tell you straight. Right, that's a invaluable resource, that kind of person that'll do that for you. All right, so then he goes on in verse 7. Oppression makes a wise man mad, and a bribe corrupts his heart. He's going to give some pitfalls in life, and there's going to be four of them I'll list here. The first one is corruption. I mentioned some of that in Kenya. Does every society have corruption in it?
Yeah.
Every culture. From all levels of government, all levels of business, you're going to just see corruption. And that's why, in many ways, the day of your death is better than the day of your birth, because it's the end of all that. You say, why can't people just be honest and fair and think of others rather than just themselves? Well, it goes back to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We live in a fallen, corrupt world, and evil prevails, and people will sell their souls to evil, and that's what they do. And he says, If that's what you want to go down that path, he says, oppression will make a wise man mad, and a bribe corrupts his heart. It'll totally destroy you from the inside out. It's like a cancer, a spiritual cancer. And it's a quick leap ahead, because by taking a bribe or, you know, cheating someone just subtly and quickly, well, no one will know, just do it this once. It's a quick path to success, isn't it, in a lot of people's minds. But it will destroy you from the inside out, from guilt. And, of course, you're going to be owing the man. And we could talk about that, but I want to get through this. Then he says the end versus the beginning. The end of a matter is better than its beginning. Patience of spirit is better than haughtiness of spirit. So what's he addressing? Why do people take bribes? Huh? To get favors. But, you know, I have the government control of this contract, and it's worth millions, and so you bribe me. Why am I taking it? Get rich. Right? Greed. It's a shortcut. And the contrast to that is right here. Just be patient. Anytime there's a shortcut offered, it's usually someone's cheating and there's corruption involved. There's really no shortcuts in life, are there? Now, sometimes you get lucky, but that's not a shortcut. It's just a blessing, right? But the only way you usually reach the finish line is by one step ahead, and it's a long, enduring, you know, walk or race. But people like the shortcuts. And we live in a society that is so terribly impatient because we're used to fast food, 4G, and if it goes down to 2G, and I don't, we just, you should hear people complain, what's wrong with this phone, you know? We want everything here and done right now, right? But patience is a huge value. And that's why he says the end of the matter is better than its beginning, because then you're done. You've accomplished the fruit of your labors there. A lot of people don't make it to the end because they're impatient. They plan it. They're exciting. See, the beginning of something is always fun. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to build that. And we're going to do that. And they're all excited. But in the middle, when you're pulling weeds and you have to water, water, water because there's drought, that's when most people give up on their business plans or marriage plans, whatever their plans are. That's why he says the end is always better than the what? The beginning, because now you have success. Now that's what he's talking about. There's no short sets. Finishes is better than starting. And anybody got a comment? I thought I saw a hand. All right. Then verse 9. Don't be eager in your heart to be angry, for anger resides in the bosom of the fools. Boy, we could preach on this one a long time. Now really, the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. James chapter what? 5. Ever since Cain and Abel, we see the problem of anger in the souls of men. And it's hard to say what the roots of anger are, but usually it comes from selfishness and pride. When you're offended or you're wronged, it's natural for anger to rise, right? Even Paul addresses that. He says, be angry, but don't sin. In fact, don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Because if you let the sun go down on your anger because you have been wrong, that anger will take hold of your heart. It'll get its roots around it. And Paul talks about the roots of bitterness that will develop. Your anger will turn into bitterness, and you'll hold bitterness to that person. And the only person that suffers is not that person you're angry at, because they don't even know you're angry. They're out going, oh, life's great. You're the only one suffering, and you'll become a bitter, ugly person. Have you met people like that? They're just bitter. They're angry at the world. Because it's all, you know, they've never been given their chance, or they've all been dealt wrongly. They're bitter. They're ugly. And that's why he's saying, man, he's got to watch out. It's so easy to be angry because there's always a just reason for it. But he says what? Don't be eager to be angry. Don't be eager. Because it's only the fools go there. Now, someone had their hand up back here. Okay, Dave.
I like what one commentary had to say about angry is that anger, if it is not, if you continue when the anger brings forth malice, the malice then brings forth the sin. And the problem is that when that sin comes, then you basically, if you let the sun go down upon that anger, you're inviting Satan to bed with you.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And how do you relieve anger then? Well, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. No one will get away with anything. Justice will prevail. Now, does that mean on this earth it will always prevail? No. Most time it seems like it doesn't. Sometimes it does. But in the end, when it's all said and done, will justice prevail? Because we never finish Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. It's been appointed for man to die once, and then what? Face, and then comes the judgment, where they will have to give an account for everything they've done on this earth, and there, that's when justice will prevail. Right? And so if you can just say, vengeance is mine, is the Lord, just remember that text in Hebrews chapter, Romans chapter 12, excuse me, the end of the chapter. It's like, God's going to take care of this. He's going to do a better job than me. And then also remember this. If we were held to account for all the things we did wrong to somebody else, where would we be in life? We are always pleading for mercy. We're always pleading for grace. Because if we were held to account for all the stupid things we've done, we'd be in a world of hurt. And so we just got to remember Jesus. He said, forgive them. They don't know what they do. Now, did that include the person that was standing there, the soldier that spit in his face? Lord, forgive them, except for that guy. He spit on me. No, did include him. How about that guy over there that mocked him? Ha ha, you're the Son of God. Just well, come down from the cross. If you saved others, save yourself, then we'll believe. Did it include him, the one that made fun of him? Did it include the other soldier that whipped him? I mean, it's one thing to be sticks and stones, you know, will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That guy used sticks and whips, right? Beat him. Father, forgive them, except for that man. Is that what Jesus said? No, he said, forgive him. Forgive him. See, that's how you're going to let anger go in your life, is trust God for justice and then give the grace to others that God gave to you. You say, is it that simple? Yes. Linda. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, anger is what did it. I like this one. Speak when you're angry and you will make the best speech you will ever regret. Is that true? Like, man, I wish they wouldn't have said that. I wish they could take those words back, but you can't. There's only one thing you do when you said something stupid out of your anger. What's the only thing you say? There are two words. I'm sorry. And that takes humility, but it's so healing just to tell someone, go up to him. You know, the other day when I said that to you, all I can say is, I'm sorry. Now, then it's up to them whether they forgive you or not, but that softens hearts, those words, I'm sorry. And it's okay to say them. It shows you're really a bigger person than the person that won't. This is what I like. He says it has to do with nostalgia, because these are pitfalls, corruption, impatience, anger, nostalgia. You wouldn't think that is a pitfall in life, but a lot of people live in the past, they're tied to the past, and their past defines them today. And Solomon puts it this way, don't say it. Why is it that the former days were better than these? Because it's so easy to look at today's headlines and look at like, ugh, this world is just going, man, I like the good old days. I mean, it wasn't like this. Now, he says, when you say that, you're not speaking from wisdom. You're really talking like a fool. So let's back up. Why can you not say the former days were better than these? Why can you not say that, Linda?
You're not thinking about history. It may have been better for you, but people have suffered nothing new under the sun.
All right. Go back to Civil War. Our nation was killing each other, and there were people on the South and North that were both part of the Lord's church, brethren, and they were shooting and killing brethren in Christ. You think those were good days? And during that time, our president was assassinated. Were these good days? And during those times, this is how you lived. Getting water from a bucket out of a well, going to an outhouse, and you ladies were doing your wash by hand. Right? Now that's all technology, but were the past days better than today? So you're not speaking from wisdom. Now, it's amazing what technology has done, just give us freedom and time. I mean, you just throw it in the washing machine, and then it's done. Okay, you got to put it in the dryer. But now they have washer and dryers in the same box, right? And it just goes through the cycle, and you have so much free time. But you say, well, there's corruption or evil. There's always been. Live in Rome. Live in Rome with all the corruption and homosexuality and morality, and Christians were put to death just for believing in Christ. Would you want to live there? No, we're living in one of the most blessed times ever, but is there still evil? Yes. So don't get caught up in that trap. Oh, the best time of your life, though, was a kid, if you live in a good family. Because what responsibility do you have generally? None. All you had to do was play and eat dinner when mom said, do I got to come and eat now? Yes. Oh, wow, you had 3 meals a day. Poor you. But all you had to do as a kid was play, 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 play. If that's what you mean, I'll give you that.
History's
yes.
History's important, though, at the same time, because if we don't remember what the past was, we're likely to repeat it
right.
And bring it up again. And Jesus, or God, always reminded the children of Israel constantly
that's right.
of the past and what he has done for them.
That's right.
So that they won't forget.
Right, yes. That wasn't the case. That's right. That's another thing. So there is this tendency to romanticize the past. This is Kachinga, Uganda. And if you want to look at the past, take a trip into Africa. This is in the house. They're cooking a meal for us. And I want you to notice it's woods, fire over these big boulders, and the pot sits on them. And this little room is filled with smoke. They're breathing it all day. It's 90 degrees outside. Inside, it must be 100. I went there, took pictures, and they all smiled and started staging the photo because they were so proud that I would take a picture of them cooking it over an open fire. And here we see Malaba, Kenya, where Anne taught. This is a lady's restaurant. It's a restaurant. And she served all of us, and some construction workers came and ate at noontime. This is where Anne and Nancy taught the ladies. And she's cooking over this little stone, making chapata. And I'm going to start a restaurant called Chapatis. This is great little, it's like, well, anyway, I'm getting, you know what this is?
Toilet.
It's not a toilet. It's closed because they look very similar. This is a well. It's how you get water. You got to let a bucket down there and pull water up every day. Every day. There's not water in your house on demand. And you got to haul it sometimes mile or 2 miles every day. Oh, but it was so much better in the life past. That's America 100 years ago, right? So don't romanticize. Okay, and we're real done right here. Wisdom along with inheritance is good. It's an advantage of those who see the sun because wisdom's protection. That's why wisdom exceeds folly. It keeps you on the right path and frames a perspective of life that you must have. The advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of its possessors. So always think about these things. Go to the funeral. Keep God in the picture, because someday we're all going to give account to him. All right, thank you.